Yo, what's up, everybody? This is Will Dog from Ozo Motley. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
Good afternoon, friends and listeners. Jim Lafferty, a co-host of the Lawyers Guild show, which you're now listening to. My dear friend and co-host Maria Hall can't be with us today. A little health problem. Nothing she's not going to be over quickly, we hope. We know she's going to be over quickly. So it's just me with our wonderful guest today. Now, as usual here in California, of course, there are a great many statewide ballot measures on our ballot this November 5th, and a number of them are of great importance to our lives, or the lives of our friends or co-workers. Past history with ballot measures demonstrates the critical role that, of course, big money often plays in whether they pass or fail, and how they get on the ballot for that matter. As we will shortly learn from our guest today, well, it costs a small fortune to get a measure on the ballot in the first place, and then there's the role that big money plays in how much advertising is done pro and con on the measure. And often that advertising, of course, is disingenuous in terms of what it says the measure is about. So our guest is going to have to educate us again, as he does whenever we are in this situation with ballot measures. And we really couldn't have a better guest for the discussion on these ballot measures than our guest today. We have him on, as I say, from periodically whenever there are measures on the ballot. He is Clifford Tasner. Now, Mr. Tasner is the president of the Southern California chapter of Americans for Democratic Action. That's the political group founded by Eleanor Roosevelt back in 1947. Cliff is also a fine composer of film and theater music. For many years, he's been writing the songs as well for political satire street theater collective known now as The Billionaires. And Cliff Tasner also produces ads, I should mention, for progressive causes and candidates. Well, Cliff Tasner, a warm welcome back to the Lawyers Guild show.
So nice to see you, Jim. Really a pleasure to be here. And I enjoy the weekend. I'd love to see more of you, but I just have to wait till the election comes and then you'll call me and, you know.
It's true. Oh, my God, it's true. He never fails us either, friends. He knows this stuff. Well, Cliff, you have, as I say, thankfully, pre-show in this case, identified for me those ballot measures that you think, at least, are the ones that our listeners and the voters should certainly be paying special attention to on November 5th. And I really thank you for that. But listeners, I would urge you to go online where it's easy to see the complete list of California ballot measures for 2024. Read them. You'll get a chance down the road here as well to read what the pros and cons are, or what the arguments are, pros and cons, and so forth and so on. But Cliff Tasner, let's start discussing one of the measures that, as I say, you identified as being very important, and that is Proposition 33. Now, that's a rent control measure, but of course, this is not the first time such a measure has been on the ballot, is it? In fact, remind us about that. And then tell us what this one, this new one, Prop 33, says, and what would it do vis-a-vis rent control if it passes, and then we can get into who's behind it and so forth.
Okay, so Prop 33 is, it basically prohibits state limitations on local rent control initiatives. So to, on local rent control, sorry, it's a prohibits state limitation on local rent control. And in 1995, so we in various cities and municipalities in California started enacting rent control over the years. But in 1995, the real estate industry, the apartment owners, the basically bought our legislature and passed a bill. They got a passed bill called the Costa-Hawkins Act, which restricted cities and counties and municipalities from even enacting rent control. And it also froze rent control for only buildings built before 1995. So, you know, that's been, well, only, you know, we're talking almost 30 years ago, and no building that's been built since will count it will even be covered by rent control. It also restricts single-family dwellings from being covered by rent control. So if you're somebody who's a renter who's renting a house, and some people do rent houses, you're not protected by rent control. And so this ballot measure, Prop 33, will eliminate that. And it doesn't enact rent control. It makes it so that cities and municipalities and counties can enact rent control. They're not restricted by this very, very much a corporate law that was written by corporate lobbyists and enacted by people who are legislators who are in their pay. And so it's an important ballot measure. Every couple years, Michael Weinstein is the head of the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, and he, they provide medication to people with AIDS, but they at a certain point made it their priority to try to provide housing for people because a lot of the people they were dealing with, a lot of the sick people they were dealing with and helping were people who were homeless or housing, threatened by the possibility of homelessness. People who are paying more than 33% of their income in rent are people who are stressed, and that money that they're spending on rent is money they can't spend on anything else. So every couple of years, there's an election, and generally, Michael Weinstein has for a number of years put this on the ballot, and the landlords, the Apartment Owners Association, and the real estate industry, and the builders have spent upwards of $100 million to defeat this ballot measure every time it shows up. And it's a very simple ballot measure. It eliminates Costa Hawkins, and you'll see it now. Like anytime I go on YouTube to watch a clip, there's an ad for somebody trying to convince me that something that's good for everybody is bad for everybody. You'll see some quote unquote expert who's not really an expert, who's basically a hired gun explaining that, oh, if we pass this rent control initiative, rents will go up, which is complete nonsense. And unfortunately, we got rid of civics classes in America a long time ago, and we have generations and generations of people without a lot of critical thinking skills, one message that would be great to get across to everybody is anytime you watch an ad, somebody's paying for it and somebody wants you to think a certain thing, and that thing may not be in your best interest. And a lot of people just don't know how to view these things with a critical mind and look at what the fact, what the reality is rather than what the propaganda is. And so till 4 years ago, they had a ballot measure like this. I think it was Prop 22. 2 years before that was Prop 10. But they spent, the real estate industry, the landlords, the apartment owners spent $100 million or more to defeat it. And they did. They did. At first, when it came out, the polls showed that it was way ahead. And over the time, people were bombarded with these ads. Now, I have this sense there's a possibility that this year's different just because people are so stressed about rent. There are people who can't, people can't stay in California, people can't stay in homes. Things are so bad with the high price of housing that this might be the year we'll see that that people will actually pass this thing in spite of the huge barrage of anti-Prop 33 propaganda that the landlords are
And
feeding
just to
everyone.
be clear, just to be clear, if people vote yes on Prop 33, what they are voting for is
They're
not
voting. They're voting to get rid of the. They're voting to repeal the Costa Hawkins Rental Housing Act, which prohibits rent control on single-family homes and houses completed after February 1st, 1995.
So if it passes, my point is if it passes, all that means is the various municipalities and governing bodies around the state will, if they wish, have the right to pass a rent control ordinance or modify the one they have from old. All right.
Absolutely.
And
Look, it was
so.
a brilliant move on the part of the landlords to pass Costa Hawkins, because rather than having to fight this battle in every city and every municipality every season, they don't have to fight it anywhere because it's very hard to, since so many of the legislators are in their pocket, it's very hard to get anybody to do anything about this. So this is on the ballot, and I want to add, I mean, I'm very grateful. I've heard people criticize Michael Weinstein. But we are a society where it's an oligarchy. And so we're at the mercy of a lot of really unscrupulous MAGA billionaires. And so every once in a while, there's a very, very wealthy person who decides to devote themselves to the public good. And even, they may not be perfect, but like Tom Steyer is an example of that. He made a lot of money. I forget what he did, but he started a climate action activism organization, What would be better would be to tax wealthy people out of existence and use government funds to, to do what's in our best interest. We should also get rid of those laws that prevent public housing from being built,
Absolutely.
and we should
Plus,
just be
let me ask you
building a
this.
ton of public housing and putting people in it, and that would really solve our issue of homelessness and housing,
Cliff, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
How bad is it in the sense of the money that's going to be spent, other than and Brother Weinstein and his who's kindly put up the money, of course, that got it on the ballot. We'll talk about what that involves later. But is there not any organization of tenants groups? I realize they don't have much money, or of other people with big bucks who perhaps are prepared to try to counter that vast number of ads we'll see against Prop 33?
Well, I mean, if you look at the people, the organizations that are supporting, the California Nurses Association is supporting it. The California
Ah,
Democratic
good.
Party is supporting it. Americans for Democratic Action, my organization is actually supporting it. Coalition for Humane
Great.
Immigrant Rights. But see, the only group that really has the money is Michael Weinstein's organization, which is called Housing is a
Yeah.
Human Right. And
Sure.
that's the problem with this entire initiative system. The landlords can spend over, I'm sure they'll want to spend $100 million. And it's funny, they're willing to spend $100 million every 4 or 2 years because they make so much more by not having anything restraining them from gouging people and raising the rent,
All right. Before we move on again, there another one that would be in the interest of the certainly the working class in this state is Proposition 32, having to do with raising a minimum wage. Talk to us about that. What is the current minimum wage? What would it do to it, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, California has raised the minimum wage. This would raise it to $18 an hour, which is great. Which is great. It's probably the right minimum wage. Look, I'd like us to get $20 an hour minimum wage. And of course, the people who oppose the minimum wage will basically cry, cry holy hell at the prospect of oh, jobs will leave, business won't. It turns out that's never the case. And what you end up with is a population of people who have the money to spend money. If you pay people well, that money, it's stimulative. It goes right back into the economy. So California has raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour. This will raise it more. And that there's nothing wrong with it. There's a I don't think anybody listening to this station will have any problem with the idea of supporting that kind of thing.
No. And I assume the employers, the big corporations, and other employers who have decided to take a stand against this will be spending a lot of money doing so.
And
Right?
another thing people can do, because we're not going to talk about every single ballot measure, but when you
Oh,
go online and
no.
look into this, look at the organizations. Like Ballotpedia has a pretty good breakdown of all this stuff. Look at the organizations supporting, look at the organizations against. One thing you'll notice, if the Chamber of Commerce is against something or for something, that it's going to be something that's in the corporate interest. Another group, there's the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. Those are the
Yes.
souls who brought us Prop 13, which hamstrung California and prevented democracy from happening here and prevented us from being able to raise the revenue to provide Californians with the things we desperately need because it created a suit need for a supermajority. And so if the Howard Jarvis Tax Association is against something or for something, you'll want to know what they stand for. They're a group that basically wants to eliminate any social programs, any taxing of the wealthy. They basically are working very hard to immiserate the working people of our state. And so, you can then vote. You can vote in. You can be informed voter and check who's supporting it and who's against it. And certain things to look out for. As I said, the Chamber of Commerce. If the apartment owners are supporting or are opposing something, they are the largest group that is standing in the way of rent control being enacted in California. So,
Yeah, folks, just use your common sense. I mean, use your
right.
common sense. You know who your friends are in this society when it comes to wages and what they should be, or rents and what they should be. Don't be fooled by some ad. Take a look at who's behind it, and it'll be clear to you what you should do in your own interest. There's two, actually. Before we leave this, though, and I should have mentioned this earlier. There's two ballot measures, aren't there, having to do with rent control?
Okay, yes,
That's
that's right. So Prop 33, which would repeal Costa-Hawkins and allow cities and municipalities to enact rent control, Now, as I said, Michael Weinstein, every couple years, puts on the ballot a ballot measure to repeal Costa-Hawkins so that rent control can be enacted. So the landlords, while they're willing to spend $100 million every couple of years to prevent this from happening, they came up with a very devious idea on how to prevent it from happening and save them money in the future. And so they put this ballot measure on there, and it is so very specific that it only applies to Michael Weinstein. So it would be like if they passed a law in California that people whose names rhyme with Bim Fafferty, who are lawyers, cannot be on the radio advocating for an anti-capitalist agenda. Like, if it's like so very specific.
My
So this
God.
ballot measure, it says, requires certain participants in Medi-Cal program to spend 98% of revenues on patient care initiative. So what it does, and it only applies to one man, there's only one man in the entire state who this law would prevent from doing what he does, and that is Michael Weinstein. So the landlord, so requiring healthcare providers that spend over $100 million in any 10-year period on anything other than direct patient care. So that's the first thing, because he's not just spending money on patient care, he's spending money on rent control initiatives and trying to house homeless people, and some of that's going better than others. But the fact is, he's doing it. Nobody else is doing it. So he has spent over $100 million in a 10-year period to try to do these things. So it would require anybody who does that and who operates multifamily housing with a 500 high severity health and safety violation. So now also they have the organization Housing is a Human Right and AIDS Healthcare Foundation have bought a whole bunch of like really dilapidated, bad shape downtown old motels. And yes, there are health and safety violations because they bought things that are falling apart. And so, yeah, there are some issues that need to be resolved, but nobody else is putting homeless people anywhere. So, I mean, obviously, yeah, resolve it. Oh, he would be required to spend 98% of revenues from the federal discount prescription drug program on direct patient care, meaning he would not be able to spend any more money on a rent control initiative or housing the homeless.
Interesting. Interesting too, because if it passes, I suspect there'll be a constitutional challenge to it. But it just and the note, and also it's going to be devious in the sense it's going to be easy for those who are against it to say, hey, why do you want all your medical dollars going to the other stuff? Why it should be focused on our medical system? God knows we've got a
Right.
lot
That's what
of
their ads are
people.
saying. I mean, I'm hoping
Sure.
people figure it out, but the fact is that this, if this passes, it's going to send a message to corporate America that you can shut down any opposition, anybody who actually is well-heeled enough to stand up against you. You can come up with a law that applies just to them, and we'll see more of this thing, I think. So I certainly, it'd be great, it's if this passes, this is a concern. And once again, it's an entire statewide initiative that is only it is only pointing at one man. It is only regulating one man's behavior. And in the event that he doesn't spend 98% of the revenues he gets from the prescription drug program that they provide to patients with AIDS, he would lose his tax exempt status.
In fact, exemption for that. Well, all right. And by the way, this is KPFK. It's 90.7 FM here in Los Angeles. Of course, you're listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, a co-host without my dear friend, co-host Maria Hall, who's a bit under the weather, but I suspect be back with us next week, certainly. And we're devoting the show today to the important matter of all the ballot measures. Every time there's a general election, certainly a presidential election, you're going to see a lot of measures on the ballot here to change the law. In some cases, we'll get to those, has changed the constitution of California. And that's true around the country as well. But California often stands out as the one with the most, not every year, but often. And so we're talking to Cliff Hasner because he understands this process and understands what's on the ballot this time. Mr. Hasner is president of the Southern California chapter of Americans for Democratic Action. Let's talk about
I just want to say adasocal.org is our website.
Oh, no. Yes. Oh, please. No. Mention that whenever you can.
adasocal.org is our website. We have meetings, the last
That's it.
board meetings, the last Tuesday of the month, and people are welcome to attend. And they can get involved in the work we're doing. We'd love you to be part of it. We are a left progressive organization. We are part of a national organization, and do a lot of endorsements, but we also are working on single payer health care. We're concerned about the issue of homelessness. We're concerned about a lot of things in Southern California. We're concerned about keeping the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant open is a thing that we're very alarmed about, given the fact that it's sitting on about 43 earthquake faults, and we're just downwind enough. The most populous county in the country is just downwind enough of a nuclear power plant that if a Fukushima-like event happened, it would. I know I digress, but anyway, I'm just saying some of the issues we're working
No,
on.
no, 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 no. All right, but we do want to get to more of these measures,
Yeah,
so
so anyway,
let's
I
do
just want
that.
to say so
Wait, wait,
basically,
wait, wait.
Prop, I just wanted to return to
No,
Prop 33.
stop, stop, stop.
Okay,
Please,
go
my
ahead.
friend, I know it gets our audience and me lost, so just hold on for a minute. I want to now go to Prop 36, and I know you consider it to be a very reactionary response to Prop 47. So first of all, remind our listeners what Prop 47 was all about, and then tell us what Prop 36 would do if it passes, and why you think it's a reactionary response to 47.
Prop 47 was an amazing and successful ballot measure that recognized that the problems of crime, we're not fighting crime correctly. You know, talk about we're tough on crime, but we're not smart on crime. And the fact is that criminalizing a whole lot of behavior and making certain things, having certain things be felonies that are victimless crimes, ends up putting a lot of people of color, a lot of poor people, a lot of young people in jail and ruining their lives. And so we enacted Prop 47, which made certain things that had been certain crimes that had been felonies became misdemeanors and put fewer people in jail. And actually, crime has gone down, even though that's not what you'll hear if you watch TV or you watch ads for this kind of thing. You know, the basically the here's the people who are you know supporting this, the California District Attorneys Association. Generally, most district attorneys, other than we have a progressive one in LA, but they want to get rid of him because they want to be tough on crime. They run for office and they want to show everybody that they're putting people away. And the Police Chiefs Association supports this, the State Sheriff's Association, oh, the Chamber of Commerce, the Correctional Peace Officers Association. So the prison guards, the police. They don't want to have less business. They don't want to have less money coming toward them, you know. And also, a lot of store owners, you know, big store owners have been concerned about these smash and grab kind of things where a bunch of people come in and rob them. And the thing is, this has happened a few times, and it's organized crime, and it is a felony because it's an organized effort. So you don't need to recriminalize behavior that is now a misdemeanor because it wouldn't apply to that anyway. But this is the issue that people keep bringing up of, oh, these people are coming in and robbing us. And so a lot of business owners are on board with this measure. And it's a terrible, disappointing measure because we every time we move forward, this is the problem with the initiative process. Every time we move forward and we manage to overcome all of the opposition from the right, or the opposition from the forces of you know tough on crime, you know structured, you know the structural criminal justice system. Every time we succeed, there's a backlash. Every time we elected a progressive district attorney, and in fact, he's doing a much better job than any of the tough on crime people we've had. But of course, there's a retrenchment. You know, when Bernie was running for president in 2016, there was a wave of progressives getting elected, and that has been followed by a wave of backlash from the reactionary forces. So this would recriminalize certain things. So Prop 47 had drug offenses not being considered felonies, and this would make drug offenses treatment mandated felonies. And you know That's really not, that doesn't solve the problem of drugs, really, or drug addiction. It would
Or of
increase.
anything, no, of anything. But as you pointed out, I think before, what it means is, based on what you said a couple of minutes ago, we'd be back to that situation again, where the effect on crime going up or down would be negligible, if any at all, and it would have impact in a racial discriminatory way. And they
Absolutely.
claim discriminatory. The poor, people of color,
That's
they
right.
would be the people who would be most criminalized by this. And by the way, the taxpayers would end up paying, you know, millions more to keep these people in jail when it shouldn't be necessary to keep them in jail because what
Absolutely.
they've done is not of that serious nature. All right.
And, you know, if somebody has a felony conviction, it'll follow them everywhere. They can't get government subsidized housing. You know, they can't get an education or a scholarship. So just a few things about this, though. Part of what's motivating it, what they're using as their motivation is the proliferation of fentanyl. So they're saying we have to do this because it'll do something about fentanyl. There are other ways to solve the drug addiction problem and the problem of the poison that is fentanyl that don't involve criminalizing a whole bunch of behavior and putting a lot more people in jail. So that's what this would
do. Well, that's interesting. I did not know that. Thank you. Let's talk now about another one that you consider important. It seems so to me, certainly. And that is on November 5th, we'll find on the ballot Proposition 5, which, if it passes, of course, would allow the issuance of local bonds for alternative housing and public infrastructure, requiring a 55% voter approval, of course. And it is, in fact, unlike most of the others, it is, in fact, a constitutional amendment put forward by the legislature, I gather. If
That's
it
right.
passes, it would be in the Constitution, therefore much harder to change. Talk to us about this one.
Okay, so now the issue of bonds as a solution to funding things is a controversial one. And I find on my board, the ADA SoCal, there are a lot of people who are very ambivalent to bonds and how they're written. And some of them are written in a way that really doesn't solve the problem or doesn't get money where it's supposed to go. So it isn't that every bond measure is great, but we also live in a society where we do not tax the wealthy at the rate that they need to be taxed in order to fund the kind of social society that we need. And so sometimes the only way to get anything funded, it's the same thing with sales tax. It would be really, sales tax is a very regressive thing. And at the same time, sometimes that's the only thing that we can get to pass to fund urgent programs. So it'd be better to have just a very, very progressive income tax, extremely steep as you get to the higher amounts, like what Eisenhower had in the 1950s, where people earning over than $10 million a year paid something like 90% on that level of income. So since we have bond measures, one of the things Prop 13 did was it imposed a supermajority to fund things in California, to raise taxes, to enact bond measures. And this would lower the threshold of passing from a huge supermajority of two-thirds, 66.666666 at infinitum, to 55%, which still is still a supermajority, but it's a supermajority that's much easier to achieve. And I think it's important. I'm against all supermajorities. The filibusters, one thing that keeps the Senate from ever doing any business in our best interest. I feel that democracy is the best system. And if you get a majority of votes, that should be it. And it seems one of the things that these corporations have built into a number of these ballot measures, like Prop 13, like that bill that made it so that Uber and Lyft workers cannot possibly be employees. One of the things they stuck in that was it required a two-thirds vote to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of unfair. I feel that there should be a law that if you're going to enact a supermajority, it has to be passed by the supermajority you're asking for. And any bill that has calls for that hasn't been passed by that amount needs to be reconsidered. Like Prop 13 should go up for another vote. And unless two-thirds of the voters vote for it, it goes away. I mean, that would be, you know, when I control the world with my brain.
Well, Cliff, and on these matters, I sure wish you did, frankly. But let me ask you this question. If it's unfair or if you just don't happen to have it at your fingertips, just tell me so. But I'm curious, maybe you've been too. There have been bond measures, of course, that are on ballots from time to time in years when it requires a two-thirds to pass. Do we know enough about the failure of those measures when they failed to know whether or not a significant number of them would have passed had it only been 55%?
I do not know the answer to that. But I will tell you this, it's a lot harder to get two-thirds. You know, and in California, look, the Republican Party is a very small party. The real battle in California is between corporate Democrats and progressives, you know, and leftist Democrats. And unfortunately, we on the left are kind of on the receiving end of that. It's not a good scenario because the corporates have a lot more resources, have a lot of money, but it is much harder to like here's an example in Florida right now. I don't know if we're going to talk about some of the ballot measures in other
Sure.
places, but there are a number of states that have abortion-related ballot measures on their ballot. And of course, the right wing legislature of Florida is trying to make, and Ron DeSantis are trying to make it very hard, even though the majority of people absolutely support a constitutional right to abortion in Florida. They've made the rule that it has to muster a 60% supermajority. And that in a state that's a purple state, it's kind of, I mean, it's a red state, but it's a red state with a lot of people who support abortion rights. They may not have 60%. So it's going to be a challenge. Arizona, on their right to abortion initiative, made sure that the judge, I forget if it was the judge or the election official or the secretary of state, the person who was in charge of, not the secretary of state, the person in charge of the ballot language, made sure that the ballot measure mentioned fetal rights or described the unborn child as a ch unborn child rather than as a fetus, in hopes that it might dampen enthusiasm. But there are a number of states that have this on the ballot, and it might be, a lot of them are red states. Nebraska has it on the ballot. Really interesting because the Nebraska courts, basically, there's a ballot measure to allow for abortion put a right to abortion in the Constitution. And there's another one by the forced birth people that would provide that unborn children shall be protected from abortion in the second and third trimesters. So they're both on the ballot. Those people were arguing that the right to abortion initiative violated the rules because it covered more than one issue. And there's some kind of law in Nebraska that you can only have one issue per ballot measure. And it turns out that the judges have said that both ballot measures will be on the ballot. And I'd lay you some money that the right to abortion is the one that wins in Nebraska.
Yeah,
And
well,
it
that's
also
good.
might help.
Let me, excuse me, hold the thought, only because I'm caught up in what you're saying, and I'm forgetting my duty here to say we're going to have to take a
Oh, yes,
brief station IT break. So let's let our engineer do that. We'll be right back with you, folks.
absolutely.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, and streaming across the globe at kpfk.org. Radio powered by the people.
Nebraska.
You're listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. We can turn the music down now. Because we're talking about all the ballot measures that are going to be on the ballot. Well, I shouldn't say all of them today. You can find all of them by going to the website and looking up the 2024 California ballot measures. But we're talking about some of the ones that are likely to be the most controversial and the most important, I think, for our listeners. And happily, we have with us somebody who really knows the P's and Q's of all of that. And that is Cliff Tasner's wonderful musician, writes music, soundtracks, what have you. But he's also, for our purposes here today, the president of the Southern California Americans for Democratic Action. Many will remember that's a wonderful progressive group formed to make significant changes and hopefully make significant changes in the corporate nature of the Democratic Party, as is the corporate nature of the Republican Party, founded by Eleanor Roosevelt back in, 1947, I think.
Yes.
All right, Cliff, again, back to Nebraska and these
Yeah, I want to just focus a little more on these abortion ballot measures because it's
Yeah,
very exciting.
please.
And so, as I said, Nebraska has one potentially blue congressional district. And so having this on the ballot might help. And there's also someone running for Senate who's running as a nonpartisan. So he's not as conservative as the MAGA Republican running for Senate, and he is pro-choice. He's running as a progressive populist, and having him on the ballot there, this might help. This, I mean, it would be surprising and amazing if suddenly Nebraska elected a Democrat to the Senate, not a Democrat, but a non-Republican, that would be interesting. There's a ballot measure to provide. Here's the Montana Constitution would be amended for the right to make and carry out decisions about one's own pregnancy, including the right to abortion. That's on the Montana ballot, and that might help John Tester, who's a fairly conservative Democrat, but and also kind of independent thinking. But if you want to, if you if a President Harris, if we get a President Harris and she wants to appoint judges, it's important that the Senate is in Democratic hands, if that's an issue that you're concerned about. So the fact that Montana, also Nevada, is another battleground state, and there's another right to abortion initiative on for the constitutional right to abortion. So having this on the ballot and having the Democrats or the non-Republicans supporting these things could, you know, have a real influence on how things shake out in terms of the November election, not just at the top of the ticket, but in the Senate and House. So.
Your point is an important point. Your point being that somebody's running for office in a state where there's a great deal of conversation going on about rent control or abortion, as you've just been talking about, the candidates who support that proposition benefit from the sentiment within the state if it's pro passing that particular ballot measure. So they it's not just how it might change the law. These ballot measures, as you're pointing out, can often affect who gets elected and changes laws down the road as well. Let's take care of another one though here, right here in California. I'm thinking of Proposition 6, of course. If it passes, it would simply end the practice of forced labor in California's prisons. Talk to us about this measure. What is meant, first of all, by forced labor? Does that currently place in our prisons? Who put this one on the ballot? And who's opposing it and why, if
Okay,
any?
so I'm going to harken back to the 1860s when basically we added the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution. And
Yes.
the 13th Amendment prohibited slavery. It ended slavery except in situations of servitude. And if you remember how that shook out during the Jim Crow years, black men were arrested on any kind of pretext for no reason at all, and put on chain gangs and made to be slaves again because they were in the criminal justice system. And so currently, in even in California prisons, and especially in the privatized prisons, you have prisoners who are they're forced to work and they're paid pennies an hour sometimes. So it's not a terrible thing that prison offers you a job and people can make a little bit of money to buy stuff at the you know at the you know, at the, I forget what they call the store in the prison.
Commissary, whatever. Yeah.
Commissary, there you go. I haven't been in,
Commissary.
done any hard time, so I don't, you know. But the idea is that it's not bad that they might offer jobs to people, but the fact that they're coercing them and paying them, as I said, pennies on the dollar is something that does go on, and it's about time we don't have that. And the other thing is, these prison laborers are often taking union jobs at some actual, you know, company with actual union members might be, you know, working in. So the ACLU, the Abolish Slavery National Network, the League of California Legislative Black Caucus, League of Women Voters, they are in favor of this. And let's see, nobody is in opposition, which is great.
Yeah.
I'm
Well,
surprised
that is
the prison guards are probably too busy trying to recriminalize everything that Prop
interesting.
47 decriminalized, and they're not paying a
Yeah.
lot of attention to this,
No,
so.
a lot of attention. Well, you think about it too, even if from the capitalist point of view, if capitalists decided to wake up tomorrow morning and be honest, I'm not holding my breath, but if they did, they would say, well, to let some employer have workers working for 20 cents an hour or 50 cents an hour to make my product is unfair competition. And it's the government, you know. And, but that, of course, has not been a problem in the past. Anybody who can get their hands on it wants to take free labor. That's typical of employers, or hire them as cheaply as he can with as few rights as he can. And nobody is cheaper or has fewer rights as a worker than somebody in prison. So it's frankly quite scandalous. And we're not alone in the country of having this kind of arrangement. You know, it's one thing to say, okay, they have to make California license plates if they're not made by any other private employer. by the way. But yeah. But to do what they're doing with it is really it is what you say. It's certainly forced labor. It's forced servitude. It's a form of slavery, if you will. And so hopefully there won't be anybody spending big bucks to defeat it, and we'll finally end the shameless practice in California of doing that because
Absolutely.
Of Prop 6.
Yeah. It also incentivizes criminalizing more behavior because you have an economic source of workers, you know. So.
Yeah. Okay, now let's, we've got about almost 20 minutes left. Let's talk about this whole process in a broader political and historic sense. And you've educated me about this, but I want you to educate our audience now about it as much. It wasn't always the case in California, was it, that you or I or somebody with big bucks anyway could decide to put a ballot measure on the ballot and legislate that way? When did it come about and why did? What was the impetus for it?
So Hiram Johnson was our progressive governor, I think, in 1910, I think. And he is the one who created the initiative process as a way of expanding democracy and allowing Californians, ordinary Californians, to get involved with their government and legislate and help enact legislation where sometimes the legislature wasn't responding and enacting legislation. So it's a great idea, but there were no guardrails. There's nothing in it that demands campaign finance reform. There's nothing in it that, you know, for instance, in order to get something on the ballot, I forget what the percentage is, but you need a certain percentage of Californians to sign a petition. Now, and in fact, this is something the Supreme Court has ruled, that you cannot prevent private signature gatherers from being hired. And yeah. That's a shame, because it's one thing if a bunch of people want to get some anti-nuclear thing on the ballot or some organic thing on the ballot, and they all volunteer because it's something they care about, and they work hard and they get all the ballot, you know, and all the signatures they need to get it on the ballot. That's one thing. It's a different thing that some corporation says, you know, like Lyft and Uber. Oh, they just passed a law that turns our gig economy workers into actual employees. Oh, we can't have that. We're just going to spend a lot of money and we're going to hire a bunch of signature gatherers. And the people gathering signatures, for the most part, they do it for a living, you know, and there are some of the very nice people. But a lot of the time, yeah. Stuff that they're gathering signatures for, you really need to read it. There are people waiting outside of Trader Joe's. They're waiting outside the farmer's market. They've got a pad, and they will say, will you sign this thing? And I suggest read the thing first and find out, the same way that I said you should look at who's funding a particular thing, try to get a sense of who's behind the initiative, what language are they using, and just because it sounds good, maybe don't sign it if there's any question about what it'll achieve, because they might be working to undermine something that you really value.
Yeah. And, you know, Michael, I think you mentioned this on one of our programs before with you. Am I right that it can be, because you need not just a few hundred thousand signatures, you need a hell of a lot of things. I think it's over a million. I could be wrong, based on the percentage of voters in the last election. But I think one of our shows said that it can well cost a couple of million dollars just if you have to pay, you know, your signature gatherers, just to get the measure on the ballot in the first place.
Absolutely.
And so if you don't have volunteers because of the nature of the measure, you've got to be pretty damn rich then, don't you? Or depend on rich money to get something on the ballots. And that's not very democratic, is it? Then
did a web search. I did a web search, and basically the number of signatures needed is a percentage of the total votes cast for governor in the preceding election.
Preceding election.
You know, it's a lot. It's a lot.
It really is
great if you have a lot of money and you can hire a bunch of people and pay them per signature, you know?
Yeah, and then they have to advertise the thing, since we talked about before.
Right.
Again, I don't expect to have this on the tip of your tongue, but I think there have been some measures where millions of dollars have been spent.
Absolutely. Many years ago, there was a ballot measure a while back. I forget what the name of it was, but it would have required that food that contains genetically modified organisms would have a label, would say on the label that it contained them. It didn't tell people what to buy. It was up to the manufacturers to convince us that it's healthy or safe when there's been no testing on a lot of this stuff. But wasn't Prop 40. Anyway, I'm sorry, I can't remember what it was.
No.
I actually did some work on it, and it was something that when it was first introduced, 75% of Californians were in favor of it. Until the agribusiness started advertising and convincing us that something that's good for us is bad for us. And that is a classic problem. And people are unfortunately susceptible because it's, you know, they don't recognize that they're being exposed to propaganda that is designed to elicit a particular response. I mean, I would love to see every school in America have a civics course that would also involve critical thinking, and every kid would be given some article from the paper, and the question would be, what are they saying? What facts are they using to say it? And then, why do you think they want you to think this? That's the question that isn't getting asked, and people need to learn. They need to train their minds to ask, why do they want me not to think that knowing that something is in my food is good for me?
The LA Times a few days ago had a fine article about, I think it was New York Times, but you can find it, friends. And it was a big article about how they don't teach civics anymore, which I've realized for a long time, and it's sort of incomprehensible to me, how you can have a public school system that it graduates its students without them frankly understanding how government works, how decisions like ballot measures get on the ballot, and how in advertising influence, whatever the subject might be. I mean, to keep people in the dark seems to be rather mischievous to me, and not wise if you want to truly inform democracy. And so, Michael, what you're talking about...
I'm still Cliff. I've never been Michael, but...
oh, I'm sorry, but I was thinking of...
thinking of Michael Weinstein, yes.
Yes, again.
I wish I had his money.
You only wish you had. I do, too. So, no, Cliff, what you're talking about, therefore, applies across the board, doesn't it, on what we need to talk about when we talk about governance in this country, what's happened to it. Raising that point, reminding me of it. It's unbelievable in a sense that we don't. When I tell friends in England, France, wherever, what the situation, they look at me as though, what are you talking about? In some weird private, I don't know, religious holy school or something? No, I'm talking about, you know, government, the public education system in America. Now,
you get that same look from people in other countries when you try to describe our healthcare system to them. So,
yes. Oh, yes. Oh, God, yes. So, Michael, let's say I could now have the power to make you the czar. Michael, I did it again. Cliff, if I could make you the czar of ballot measures in California, Cliff Dasner, what are some of the changes you would want to see in the law and hopefully arrive at it in a democratic way?
To get it on the ballot, I would require that you cannot use paid signature gatherers.
All right. I like
because
that.
It becomes a lot harder for the two companies that offer a kidney, the dialysis services, them in the ballot to prevent us from regulating them, you know?
Yep.
So it becomes a lot harder for a corporate interest to convince a bunch of people to spend a lot of time going door to door for signatures. And the only things that would get on the ballot are things that people really deeply care about. That would be the first thing. I'd also require that the advertising actually tell you who, not that it's paid for by Californians for a better California, but it's paid for by donors who are from the Petroleum Institute I would want to know, and I'd in fact have the ads, have it take up half of the ad, exactly who the actual funders of the initiative are. And,
yes.
And one of the biggest problems is because it's the same lack of civic education, our news media covers elections as a horse race and does not do the deep dive where we learn what these things are. People, it's even worse that we have to vote for judges when nobody knows what the heck they're voting for. And so it is sort of democratic malpractice not to allow people to have a critical argument. There should be debates on these things. They should be, you know, the corporate interests that want to pass these things should have to go up against consumer advocates arguing why people should not pass these kind of things. You know, I would want more campaign finance involved in scrutiny. I would want to make sure that there's a donation limit on how much money can be used to promote a ballot measure. And so it just can't be some big, deep-pocketed corporation says, I don't want to be regulated anymore. Let's convince people that more pollution is actually better for their lungs than, less. So.
Yeah, no, well, I agree with you, of course, and I think many, many people would. I mean, if you we talk about the threats to our democracy that are on the ballot in terms of the presidential race, and we talk about, well, if you look at if folks go online and look up the organizations in the world that rate democracies, it'll take your finger a while to get down far enough on the list in terms of how democratic nations are to get to the United States, which is listed in various ways: a troubled democracy, a partial democracy, a scarred democracy, and it's way, way down there. Countries you've never heard of are considered far more democratic. So certainly what you're talking about, Cliff, not only in terms of the ballot measures, but in terms of candidates, would make a great difference, of course, as well. And that's one of the ways in which this country is not democratic, hasn't been for a long time. So that's great. Now, before I let you go, is there any other national? We've got a good 5 minutes or so left. Is there any other national campaign? Well, maybe it's around some other issue, the crime issue again, or environmental issues, or whatever, that you've come across that is enjoying popularity in a lot of different states.
Well,
That
I brought
tells
up the
us
abortion issue. That
better.
seems like the most clear example of
Yeah,
that.
I
But
guess.
I do want to say this. We're a corporate oligarchy. We're not quite a democracy anymore. We have, but I want to say this, every couple of years, we all get a little tiny modicum of power. And if we use it responsibly, if we're conscientious and our voters who do our due diligence, and I don't mean reading the campaign mailers that come in the mail. I've encountered that where I've been on the phone making calls for a particular ballot measure or something, and somebody will say, or a candidate, "Oh, I need to do my research." I said, "Oh, how will that be? Oh, I got a lot of stuff in the mail. I'm going to read all that stuff." Those were sent to you as propaganda to convince you to vote a certain way. That is not information. But if we are responsible voters, if we're conscientious voters, we need to vote. And you may not like somebody, you may say, "Oh, I don't like anybody at the top of the ticket." Well, I got news for you. There's down ballot races. There's somebody running for school board who is either in the pocket of the charter schools or is in quarter, is somebody supported by public school teachers where our tax dollars go. There is somebody running for the water board. There is a ballot measure that is going to affect your life. And every once in a while, I'll run into somebody and be like, "Oh, they're proud of the fact that, oh, I don't vote. It's all politics, dirty, dirty stuff." I got news for you. Get a tiny little bit of power, and you need to use it. And you don't have to vote for everybody on your ballot, but you need to vote.
And the other thing is, in terms of that, don't be misled, my friends. Yes, I too know people who, "Well, I'm so disgusted with the whole process. It's not democratic. It's rigged. It's money. It's this. It's that." And I can't argue against any of that. I don't. But what I can tell you with certainty is that when you don't vote, somebody else is casting your vote. I don't mean they're casting the way you might have voted. I mean, by not putting your vote on the scale, you are voting because other people are. Now, if everybody decided to stay home, that would be one thing. But that's not what happens. Millions and millions of people will vote for the president of the United States on November 5th. You say, "Ah, the hell with the two of them. I don't care, whatever." You stay home. Well, you can stay home. But it's not as though you haven't been counted. It's not as though your lack of a vote has not had an influence on the outcome of the election. And to multiply that by all the numbers of people who do not vote. One reason I would argue that our democracy has suffered as much as it has is the fact that we tend to have such low turnouts in our votes compared to what many other democratic countries do. You know, if you're lucky to get 55, 60% of the vote for a presidential election, and you're lucky to get 5% in some school board election, what does that say about your commitment to
Yeah, I remember
democracy?
there's a mayoral election about 8 years ago, maybe, and it was like 16% of Los Angeles. But, there are all these red states that are doing everything they can to disenfranchise as many people as possible. So we have to keep fighting for the vote, and we have to make sure we don't elect people whose agenda is an anti-democratic one, because there's a movement in America that really, I became an activist because, my family, we lost a lot of people to fascism.
Yes,
You know,
Irvine.
my and you know, my great grandfather was beaten to death by a Cossack pogrom in Poland in 1900 around Easter Sunday, and then 20 of our relatives, his descendants, died in the Holocaust. So fascism scares me, and right, so I became an activist because I want to prevent fascism from happening, and
Yes.
I feel like we're a hair's breadth away from it now. Even without fascism, we are a corporate oligarchy. I personally
Yes.
feel like there's more room for us to operate on the left to trying to fix that, trying to work toward change, trying to spread more union activity, trying to do what we can to make this an equitable, just, and sustainable world when there isn't a fascist government in place. Because when there's
Yes.
a fascist government in place, you've got shock troops with AR-47s marching around, and workers go on strike, somebody will come gun them down. I know that sounds very alarming, but I really feel like there's people
No,
in this country would love to see that kind of scenario happen. We have to
no.
maintain democracy. We've got to fight to expand the vote. We've got to fight to make sure that everyone can vote. If I had my druthers, every single American would be able to vote, and it would be a federal crime to disenfranchise anybody, and that includes prisoners. In
Yes.
Norway, politicians go give speeches at prisons, and I love to see all the prisoners vote because all of these red districts up in the northern part of the state, the San Joaquin Valley, where we built all these prisons, would suddenly become blue districts because it wouldn't just be the local people who are prison guards and their families voting. It would actually be the prisoners, and there'd be incentive to try to come up with policies that will help people in jail with getting an education, getting training, so when they get out, there's no recidivism. So.
Well, we can talk about, a law requiring all citizens to vote or suffer some minor penalty, maybe not so minor. You can go to the polls and say none of the above, or just draw a big X through your whole ballot if you want, but at least you have to show up at the polls. We could also have a system whereby some people received a day's pay or half a day's pay because they had to take off some time and go to the polls and
I'm all
vote.
for it.
Any
Yeah.
number of ways, if we were really serious about democracy, if we really wanted people to come out and vote in vast numbers, not just the folks that could afford to vote, you'd find politicians talking more about the working class and not simply the middle class. Well, another show for that, my friend, another show for that. Cliff Tasdra, as always, it's wonderful to have you on this topic. Remind everybody again about your organization,
Hey,
ADA, and
Americans
how
for
people can
Democratic
learn more
Action,
about
so ADA SoCal, Americans for Democratic Action, adasocal.org. And if you go on the website, you can sign up and you'll get our mailers. And we're working hard to try to bring, as I said, a just, equitable, and sustainable world and society in California and US and Los Angeles, et cetera. We can do that.
Yes, and you have candidates and you have members of your organization already elected people in Congress and elsewhere. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yep, we do. We do.
I know you do. Well, all right. Thank you again. Thank you again, Contester. Thanks, all of you who are listening today. Thank you to D'Angelo Jones and the Master Control. You've been listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty. I'm Maria Hall. We'll hopefully be back with us again next week. Until then, my friends, you stay healthy. And as the song is going to remind you shortly, stay active and stand up for your rights.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is on the dear.
This is Nick, host of Bike Talk Online at KPFK since 2008. I used to have a car. But you don't need a car to get around LA. And we talk about that every episode.
Just do it!
I donated my car to KPFK, called 877-KPFK-AUTO. They took it away. Tax deduction. Anyone can have their car taken away. Cars, boats, motorcycles, any fossil fuel vehicle. Leaf blowers, not a vehicle. Call 877-KPFK-AUTO. Donate your car to KPFK. Help the station. And commute by bike. There's no traffic on a bike.
Hey, this is Brad Friedman of the Bradcast, heard right here on KPFK, Mondays at 3 p.m. As you know, KPFK is corporate-free, listener-supported radio. But that means we need you to support our work and help drastically shorten our fund drives by joining the KPFK Sustainers Circle today. You can pledge $5, $10, $20, or any amount you like, automatically collected each month to help keep the Bradcast and all of the other KPFK shows on the air. Please go to kpfk.org and click Make a Pledge to join the Sustainers Circle and help keep KPFK's important